No need to beware. It's a holiday storm of spoilers. This week, Joanna, Neil, and myself have each selected three holiday pieces of media we'd like to share with you and each other. We're not spoiling. Really? This week we're not spoiling. Everybody think of something we could pick. What should we do?
Ghost of Christmas Past, Future, and Present.
Well, then there has to be three of us. Nope, we each got to pick a reindeer. Hello and welcome to Storm of Spoilers, a very Storm of Spoilers holiday special. I'm your host, Dave Gonzalez, and I'm going to pick Dasher as my favorite reindeer. Also, the first.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and I'm going to pick Prancer because it's the only reindeer to get a very successful spinoff film.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I'm going to go with Rudolph because obviously you would go with Rudolph.
The most famous reindeer of all.
Right. And as the most famous person.
Of all.
Of all. I think that that most personifies me.
Yeah.
I thought you would pick Vixen for sure.
Oh, Vixen's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I've met too many strippers named Vixen, though.
Okay, so Rudolph it is.
It's really taking a turn.
Anyway, we're here this like holiday weekend. I hope you're all winding down in listener land, maybe doing some traveling, maybe just enjoying the impending weekend, not having to work, and celebrating some sort of end-of-the-year togetherness with people. How you celebrate, up to you, but we're here to help you out with some pop culture that we enjoy around this time of year. But first, we have our little housekeeping to do. Joanna, do we have any new reviews? I think our Rogue One episode was really good. I hope we motivated some people to write something.
I do have a review. This one is actually from a week ago, and I chickened out. It's an accent challenge. I know you guys have missed that, so as a holiday gift to you, here are some terrible accents from Joanna Robinson. This is 5 stars, excellent podcast from Azriel 4854. Love the show, and it's a highlight of my week. Great job on the off-season tour. Now to chastise Joanna for being off last week. Good day, governor. Nope. Yep. British. top of the morning to you, lads, in Irish. And finally, is good podcast with two gentlemen and a Fräulein, German. So that was a terrible tour of accents. And Azriel concludes with, thanks again for the good work. Oh, and please revisit South Park for season 20, which I think is the best the show has ever been. So there you go. A terrible tour of accents, courtesy of Azriel 4854.
Nice. Did that review come in right before the South Park season finale or right after the South Park season finale?
December 9th.
Interesting. I'd be interested to see how that worked out for that particular listener.
Now I want to go and watch the end of season 20 of South Park.
Oh, yeah. It was an interesting thing to do. I think it was very revealing about what's going on behind the scenes over there. But that's neither here nor there. You could leave us reviews on iTunes. You have several weeks to do so. And then we'll come back and we'll read them aloud. Sometimes in horrible accents, if you require. The other thing we do here is Neil catches us up on Game of Thrones, one of our favorite television shows, and the thing we originally started speculating about. Neil, is there more Game of Thrones news this week?
Yes, there is.
Of course.
There's two bits and bobs that I'd like to talk about. One is that they were talking this week, they being the HBO people, about, once again, about spinoffs, because I know that the number one thing people are worried about is not how Game of Thrones will end, but what happens after it ends. And the quote that I found charming in its strangeness was that the spinoffs are in the, quote, embryonic stages of development. which I guess means they could be aborted.
This is not a video podcast, but if it were, you would see Neil making some fabulous air quotes while he read that out loud.
Disconcerting facial expressions when he tried to make that joke. The other piece is actually season 7 related. Some new set photos in the last week or so that involve everybody's favorite occasionally appearing pirate, Euron Greyjoy. And he is in what almost appears to be a King's Landing-ish market, or maybe an Old Town-ish market. It's hard for me to tell exactly, although I think it is also where they're shooting the Old Town stuff in Spain. What was interesting about this is that Ilaria Sand and Tyene are there sort of around them, or potentially being led around by Greyjoy soldiers. So how this fits into the rumors about the fates of the Sand Snakes is very interesting. If maybe the sea battle goes poorly and a couple of Sand Snakes don't quite make it, sad. Maybe they capture the other two. Would be very interesting, because these are, as we must remind ourselves, the figureheads of an entire kingdom with a very, very strong army. So, maybe that'll get the Dornish a little bit more active in this conflict, having their leaders killed and captured and whatnot. But, I just found that interesting. It's kind of not the place I expected those two to pop up.
If I've gathered anything from hanging out with you two book readers, it's that the Dornish are cool. I am waiting for that to happen.
The book Dornish are cool, that's for sure.
Dave!
Okay.
You're acting like you never met Oberyn Martell.
That was pretty cool. But that
feels like
single,
so long ago.
That's like having one black friend and saying that's okay, you know?
Oberyn Martell is the one black friend of all of Dorne.
We do like Oberyn. It's like, well, yeah, you got the one. But there needs to be more than one before there's a pattern of me liking Dorne.
Yeah, it's like having one black friend and then like everyone else is telling you how great hip hop is.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, I don't know, I don't have a whole lot of context for this.
Yeah, I like digging ourselves deeper into this metaphor.
Yeah, it's going nice. Terribly.
Yes. That is our Game of Thrones news segment. And we'll be back talking to you about our holiday special choices right after this ad break. Hello and welcome back. We're going to bring pop culture to the holidays, much like we brought it to the Thanksgiving holiday season or the fall holiday season. I think we just called it fall because it was Thanksgiving and we're meshing all the holidays
and Halloween.
We have a lot of pop culture that we like here.
Look forward to next year's Easter special.
Oh yeah. My God.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to watch
things where they come back from the dead. It'll be great.
So much Jesus.
I think we could also talk about Game of Thrones there. And what is it? That Matthew McConaughey dragon movie where the
Reign of Fire.
Reign of Fire, where the male dragon comes back from the
dead.
Reign
of Fire is an amazing movie. So wait. If we don't have a Reign of Firestorm spoilers in the future, I definitely demand that we have at least like a dragons.
I think the dragons, that
Storm
idea also
yeah.
just popped into my head. Like, we should just do an episode about dragon stuff.
Like,
so we
Dragonheart.
Right.
Dragon Lance. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of dragons.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Uh-huh. How to Train Your Dragon, the TV show, which I watched some of this past weekend because I had no children.
Oh. I was going to say, there was maybe a story there, but then the story was you just know children.
I do know children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so dragons in the future, but holidays for now.
But holidays right. for now. And we're going to start off a kind of Christmassy. We've each picked three things that we want to talk about this episode. And we're going to kind of cycle through, starting with Joanna, who has picked a Bill Murray classic. Let's talk about Scrooge first.
Oh, yeah, this is where maybe Neil and I get into a fight, which is...
Is it?
Maybe.
Yes.
So A Christmas Carol in its many forms is a story that crops up over and over again at this time of year, whether you prefer a pure Dickensian take on the tale or a felty, Muppety version of it. I prefer the cynical, sarcastic, sometimes violent, always Bobcat Goldthwait 80s film or early 90s film Scrooged, which I have seen approximately 1 million times. And someone told me they watched it for the first time recently and it did not go well for them. And that's probably true. It's probably not a movie you can watch now. Not all Bill Murray movies stand up. Except for Ghostbusters. So this, though, cast Bill Murray in the Scrooge role, and he gets visited by three ghosts and does the whole thing, except, you know, the ghosts are not what you know from Dickens, but rather my favorite being, of course, Carol Kane is like this demented tooth fairy who keeps, like, beating Bill Murray up. But you also have David Johansen as the Ghost of Christmas Past. You've got a weird side story involving homeless people for some like weird reason. Karen Allen plays his love interest. The aforementioned Bobcat Goldthwait is around as a TV employee. This all takes place at a TV station where they are putting on a production of A Christmas Carol. Anyway, like I said before, I don't know if you like were to watch this for the first time now, if the sort of Robert Mitchum, Robert Goulet of it all would land well with you. But for me, this is a classic. I watched it probably when I was way too young. Anyway, do you guys have any feelings about Scrooge? Is this a thing that matters to you?
I mean, I think the watching Bill Murray movies way too young is definitely part of my childhood. I'm wondering if it's like specifically our age group, or can you expose children these days and still be? Yeah, I think so. I think it's all like innuendo based, right? It's oddity, yeah. and you're slightly uncomfortable with what he's doing. At least at the beginning, I remember.
Mm-hmm. I would like to say that I like Scrooged.
Good.
I like it a lot. It's one of my favorite. I took umbrage with Joanna on Twitter this week, though, because I believe there was some talk of Scrooge being a lot better than A Muppet Christmas Carol, which I don't agree with.
I don't get A Muppet Christmas Carol. It does nothing for me.
Here's the question. Is there not to get about Michael Caine? Michael Caine as Ebenezer Scrooge might be the greatest thing that's ever happened in the world of Charles Dickens.
Here's the one thing that
the Charles Dickens
like about
expanded universe,
the CDEU.
Yeah.
The one thing that I do like about A Muppet Christmas Carol is when Kermit goes like beep boop beep boop be doop beep boop. That song is awesome. The rest I can leave. I don't know what it is. I loved the Great Muppet Caper and the Muppets Take Manhattan and the Muppet Movie growing up, but I didn't, for some reason we didn't watch A Muppet Christmas Carol. I'm trying to see how old I was when it came out, but we just didn't have it in my house.
Well, let's make the really squishiest transition ever to my pick, which is Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No.
That's one of your picks.
No, I did it before I looked at the notes for the entire episode, and I thought, let's pair it with Scrooge, and I'm so glad that you guys have previously had this argument.
Well, let me just say really quickly, I was 11 when it came out, so surely if I had seen it then, I would love it. But I didn't see it, I think, until I was 20, and I was just sort of like, and it was in a bad, when I saw it, it was like in a bad time for Muppet movies because it was like Muppets in Space and the Muppet Treasure Island. Anyway.
Hey, you keep saying bad time. I don't know.
Okay.
Nope.
Maybe it was a bad time for me and my black soul. So Dave, tell us about A Muppet Christmas Carol and what it means to you.
Well, I mean, I think it definitely comes with the time that it, because it came out in 92. So it probably was the thing that I watched like on home video, like late nights trying to like fall asleep on Christmas Eve. is probably why like imprinted in my mind. But there's something about like, you know, not necessarily your first time through the Christmas Carol story, but the one that sort of resonates with you for some sort of reason. So it's like, even when I recall in my mind other versions of the Christmas Carol, they still have a rubber chicken factory, which I know is completely based out of a Christmas Carol. Also at that time in my life, I was just generally into Muppet movies, and I didn't realize that this was sort of the transition out of the, you know, Jim Henson driven era into like sort of the Muppet licensing era, which isn't bad, but it is different from like the Muppet movies that came out when Jim Henson was doing Muppet movies, which are much more, you know, wacky ensemble adventures, whereas this began their period of just doing adaptations. But I'm going to have to agree with Neil that just Michael Caine as Scrooge, and a Scrooge that has to sing, which Michael Caine doesn't usually do, and a Scrooge that doesn't get to be like completely Scroogey grumpy because it is, after all, a Muppet movie, really just makes you feel warmly towards Michael Caine the whole time. There is the creepy Christmas Future baby puppet, which I can't necessarily get behind. But every Muppet movie has about one puppet that I can't get behind, so that's about par for the course. But I think it's definitely a nostalgia hook for me, and it's just a 92 kids version of Christmas Carol, which was right up my alley.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. It's great.
Well, that makes sense what Dave said. Like, doesn't it sound exactly like snobby Joanna Robinson to be like, I like the Muppets when Jim Henson was running them, and after that it just wasn't the same. That sounds right just like me, without knowing that that's why I didn't like later Muppet movies. But
I mean, that's, you know, fair. I mean, I think that there is, especially because there's like a slight age gap between the three of us.
Yeah.
Because I think that there is, I was joking earlier when I said that I thought that was a good time for Muppet movies. This is the only great Muppet movie to come out in that era, I think, because you had like the stuff of the late 70s that was the Henson driven stuff that was just magnificent. And then, yeah, Muppet Treasure Island, Muppets in Space. I liked him because I was like seven, but I don't look back at them fondly.
Right.
But I think A Muppet's Christmas Carol really rides on two characters being, or essentially three characters being very effective, which is Michael Caine, obviously. Kermit is a very strong Kermit-y role. He's a very good Bob Cratchit.
He is a very good Bob Cratchit, yeah.
And I've always been really into Gonzo and Rizzo as the narrator, which I thought was a really great twist.
I think your enjoyment of 90s Muppet movies boils down to whether or not you're a Gonzo person, and I think I'm not.
This see, is like there you go.
An increasing Gonzo era. We're getting away from like Piggy and like Rolf and all that sort of stuff. And the Pepe the Prawn also, I'm just, right, that's what his name is, Pepe the Prawn?
Well, yeah, he came on.
Not into it.
He I know, even he's, came he's on a later.
Space. He's Muppets from Space. But I'm just saying, right. Like, these are, like, newfangled Muppets that I'm like, yeah, give me my original. I mean, Gonzo's an older Muppet. Anyway, point being, I like Kermit as Cratchit. I like Sadler and Waldorf as Marley and Marley. That's also pretty solid.
Oh, that
solid
is good.
Casting. But, yeah.
From Muppet Central Casting.
Yes.
But yeah, no, and to reiterate, I do really like Scrooged. Like, it's also a very good movie, I think, but my mom was probably a little more protective at that point when I was like 9 or 10. And Scrooge was something I watched later and probably on the sly, whereas Muppet Christmas Carol, like another one of the movies we're going to talk about here in a little bit on my list, is something we just watched every year diligently, and so it's there. It owns space in my mind.
Is that Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas?
Yeah. Yes.
Because I would like to talk about that one next, because I am completely ignorant as to what
I know. Me too. I don't know what this is at all.
You guys have never seen Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas?
No.
No.
Okay, so let's first of all, I'm going to ruin your holidays because you're not going to be able to think about anything else.
Okay.
After this, it is from the era that Joanna is talking about. It is 1977 TV movie directed by Jim Henson. It is a Muppet movie.
Oh.
And it is the weirdest goddamn Muppet movie that has ever been made. And it's available, I believe, on Netflix. So Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas is about a family of otters, and they're super poor. It's about poverty. And I realized later that my mother would watch this to explain to me like why our Christmases were like just okay. It's like, hey, because when you're like, it's funny. This is going to get a little too personal. But my mom was always the whenever we would, my brother and I would complain about like not getting things we wanted, she would always be the, she was the kind of mother who would threaten to drive us across town and show us how real poor people live. So she'd be like, we'll get in the car right now and I'll go show you some real poor people. Because we'd always be like, we're so poor, not knowing that we were like totally just middle class. So we would watch Emmett Otter Jug Band Christmas. The whole story revolves around Emmett Otter, who plays, he's a musician, and his mother, who is a, I guess she washes clothes for the other river people, river animals. She's a clothes washer, and they live, in a shack. They are the dirt poorest, things in existence. And the entire crux of the movie is about Emmett putting a hole in the wash tub that his mother uses so that he can go and he could turn it into like a stand-up bass and go win money at a musical contest so that he can buy his mother something nice. Whereas his mother wants to use the wash tub to wash more clothes so that she can go buy him a guitar. That he wants. And it's all about like how we sacrifice for each other, and we make these sacrifices around the holidays, and really what we need in the end is family. That is the ultimate present. So it's, and it's so fucking weird, you guys. Like, it's the weirdest, darkest movie about like hardcore poverty. Like, it's not, it does not sugarcoat what being poor is like. And wow, it's great. It's got Paul Williams songs. It's 48 minutes long. It's it's got some weird versions of Muppets that you'll see later that aren't themselves. Like, there's you know, there's a lizard that kind of looks Kermit-y. I mean, this is, Kermit was around, but like, if there's like, it's like a knockoff Muppet thing, but it is a Jim Henson movie. So highly recommend. I make people at my house watch it every year, and it scars everyone. It's so fantastic. But yeah, we watched it like every year at my house to remind us that we had it pretty good.
That's pretty messed up.
That's pretty, it's fantastic. I think your mom sounds amazing.
I know. Well, it was a brilliant tactic, because if you watch that on Christmas Eve and then you wake up the next morning, anything you get is fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. All spoiled brats should watch this.
Seriously. But yeah, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, if I had to recommend a Christmas movie. It won, this is fun facts, it won, or it was nominated for 4 Emmys, 4 primetime Emmys. When you watch it, there's no way that's true. Like, you're gonna watch it, there's no way. Because the songs, I mean, I love Paul Williams. He's one of the greatest. But the songs are just so weird. It's like watching like a bizarro world Muppet movie. So there you go.
Awesome. All right.
Yeah. Highly recommended.
I got to go watch Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. That's good. Oh,
and we need to report back after you guys do, because we could do a whole episode on Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
The world building in Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas is terrifying. People are eating possibly sentient animals.
Seriously, there would be no social justice warrior episode quite like it.
Oh, otters, is there nothing you can't help us discuss?
So much classism. Classism and violence. And it's amazing.
Well, to transition into our fantasy part of the episode, we're going to talk to Joanna Robinson about the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I'm unclear if you're talking about the movies or actually rereading all the books.
Oh, no. It would be cooler if I were talking about the books. But, you know, I think it's worth talking about some properties that are not directly Christmas related, because there are some movies you just watch at Christmas that have nothing to do with like Santa or reindeer or anything like that. And for me, there's like a few of them, and usually they're films that I fell in love with at Christmas time. So I would add The Force Awakens to that list because I watched it like so many times at the theater last Christmas. I was obsessed with it last Christmas. And so it feels like Star Wars is now intentionally so sort of planted its flag on Christmas time as becoming a Christmas entry. And when I sort of floated this idea on Twitter the other day, and a bunch of people mentioned Harry Potter. Interestingly, Harry Potter did not come out at Christmas. It was like a summer release and occasionally a November release, but it was never, even though it's a very Christmassy property, it was never a Christmas release. But the first three Lord of the Rings and later the Hobbit movies, but we don't need to talk about those, were released in December. I'm sure I've talked about this on at least some podcasts, if not this one before. I stood in line for all three movies with my friends. I was in college when they came out. I would come home for the holidays with my high school friends and stand in line to go see the Lord of the Rings movies. The last one we watched, Return of the King, it was pouring rain. So the theater, which is this big theater in Bourne County, was packed. We would always go to the same theater. Has this huge screen, big theater. It was packed, but everyone was like damp. So it was like moist in there while we're watching Return of the King and you're watching it and it has like three different endings, right? So you're like, okay, now I can leave the sort of like muggy abs. Nope. No. I mean, those of us who know the story knew more endings were coming, but the fake out endings were particularly funny that year. Anyway, I think of the Lord of the Rings trilogy as a Christmas staple. I watch it every year at Christmas when I'm wrapping presents. So if I have too many presents to wrap, like if I need to restart it, I'll watch it with a commentary on. I love it. I don't know. It just gives me those Christmas feelings. So Lord of the Rings.
Original cut or extended edition?
Extended edition.
Oh, God.
You have so many presents to wrap, you have to restart the extended edition.
There's trees to decorate. There's other Christmas things to do, but yeah.
Joanna, I think you need to watch Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas before your Christmas shopping this year. You clearly are buying too many presents.
Maybe. Well, some years I wrap other people's presents for them, too. So
fair enough.
I consistently do the behind-the-scenes documentaries that came out with those extended editions when I go back to my parents' house for the holidays, because they have them, and that's like the magic of filmmaking right there. They made all that armor and shit, and it was great, and then The Hobbit happened.
It's also just like Donna McMonaghan and who's Pippin? The other one. Pippin. Oh, Billy Boyd, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Just sitting there making fun of Orlando Bloom, like in every occasion that they can, in the commentary, in the documentaries, they just like endlessly mock Orlando Bloom. And Orlando Bloom is like kind of defensive about it, and it's hilarious. And also, it's Jonathan Rhys-Davies, right? Who plays Gimli, who like had an allergic reaction to his makeup. So he'll just be like, I was in my room reading because I couldn't do anything because my skin was coming off. And he's just like so sad and lonely and upset. And then you have Christopher Lee, who's like this big Tolkien nerd, will be like, well, if you consult the original Tolkien text. And it's just like the most delightful experience. So Lord of the Rings. Merry Christmas.
I really think that this choice exemplifies one of the sort of core things about Christmas, is that you have a lot of time that you feel the need to waste.
It's not a waste, how dare you, but
you don't
I'll say,
necessarily want to talk to family all the time.
I'll say fill. A lot of time to fill.
A lot of time to fill, yeah.
That's not a waste of time. How dare you?
Well, yeah, okay.
I mean, you watch all the Game of Thrones commentary, and I have not been able to,
that's true,
to do that.
We all fill time in our own very specific ways. And Lord of the Rings, for me, kind of falls into the once a decade list, where I only want to watch it like once a decade to remind myself that it was impressive and great. It's just so long and so draining, and I can't do it all the time. So there's that.
I don't feel drained by it. I feel invigorated by it. So.
Ah, okay.
I hear you.
I mean, that makes sense. To each their own, especially at Christmas.
I've also been listening a lot this Christmas to the complete Lord of the Rings soundtrack, which is on Spotify. So, like, from all the themes from all three movies. So, you know, if that strikes your fancy, that's also a thing you can do.
That actually, I think I could do.
Yeah, it's really good.
That music is really good.
Yeah, I play some D&D to that music occasionally.
All right.
I didn't mean to keep echoing Joanna, but my pick is going to be The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the first book of C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles, the first book that was released, although I don't think it's chronologically the first book, although it jumps back in time.
It's been a while
since I've read it all the way through like I was supposed to. Yeah, it's basically like the Christian Lord of the Rings, Lion, the Witch, the Wardrobe.
But Santa's actually in it.
Yeah, Santa shows up.
Jesus.
The lion is Jesus. And
wait, seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you not read or seen?
No, I mean, I've seen the movie, The Chronicles of Narnia.
Santa's in the movie.
Jesus is in that movie?
Oh, no.
Jesus is the lion.
The lion's Jesus.
Oh.
Because he gets killed ritualistically.
Wait, Neil, have you never talked about how Aslan is Jesus?
No. Oh. This is
okay.
Super
we're gonna have to do a whole Lion, the Witch, the Wardrobe.
Then we could go into Voyage of the Dawn Treader, which is what I really want to talk about. Anyway, the beginning of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, especially where we first meet Mr. Tumnus in his like winter wonderland, and then later when Edwin is seduced by the Snow Queen with Turkish delights, mm-hmm. are both, for some reason, very much embedded in my memory with having to do with the Christmas time, which means I must have been rereading it at some point in my impressionistic youth enough that I've reread the entire Narnia trilogy, I think, like, twice in the past decade, usually because it's, like, something you could, like, challenge yourself to do on international flights. But the first book I still think you could return to is sort of, like, a childish wonder one-off that is very Christian now in hindsight, but as a tiny Lutheran child... I didn't really notice the Christian part until, like Neil, someone told me.
Mm.
Aslan is definitely Jesus, but once you know that, then you have to realize that Harry Potter is also Jesus. So,
right,
Jon Snow is Jesus.
Jon Snow is definitely Jesus.
Yeah, this is the whole Easter special we were talking about. Yeah,
Jesus
also
and his dragons.
Mr. and Mrs. Beaver's like little wooden hidey hole. I used to picture that as being like warm and cozy and a good place to spend the holidays.
So here's the big question, though. You guys both read the books, right? What do you think of the movie, The Chronicles of Narnia?
I prefer. There's like a 1980s BBC adaptation.
Was the animated one? No, that's the Lord of the Rings again.
It's live action. And if you talk to, like, this came up recently because a friend of ours, his girlfriend dressed as the Snow Queen. That's what she's called, right? The White Witch, Snow Queen.
Sure.
At Halloween. And she had Turkish delight and it was a whole thing. And her costume was amazing. So we were all talking about The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. And it turns out that all of us who are older than you, children of the 80s, watched this miniseries growing up. It was a miniseries. And, so that's who like Susan and Lucy and all of them are for us. So when this, you know, CGI lion version came along. I mean, I dig Liam Neeson as Aslan. I think he's really good. And I think the kids are good, too. That franchise went hard off the rails, man. I'll tell you that much right now. But, yeah, I like the first installment. I thought it was pretty good. What do you think?
I also saw those miniseries ones that you were talking about. I don't remember under what circumstances I would have. I imagine I'm just, like, bugging my parents enough about the books. They, like, might have dug them up from a library or something. But the new movies, first one fine, other ones shouldn't have existed. For the exact, basically the same reason I'm telling you that you could reread The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I used to and might still have like the subtitle, like A Story for Children, just like as a holiday one-off, and be charmed by the fantasy of it and not necessarily have to think too much into the altar sacrificing resurrection Jesusness of it.
Oh, so much Jesus.
They shorn his mane.
So much Jesus. Don't they wash his feet too? I believe so.
Oh my God, maybe.
I'm pretty sure Susan washes his feet. I could be wrong, but anyway.
Oh my God.
Neil, pull out of Jesus with your next choice.
Oh, yeah.
Exports.
Yes. So have you guys.
Please don't ever say pull out of Jesus again.
No, you should always pull out of Jesus.
Man, that really threw me for a loop.
I took a turn. I'm sorry.
Have you guys seen Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale?
No, everything you pick is amazing and foreign to me.
Oh, this one's literally foreign.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it as a teenager.
Wait, you saw it as a teenager in 2010?
Wait. This is not what I'm thinking of then. So
this
no.
This is different.
No.
So this, yeah, okay. All right, because there's a couple of them. But this is a Norwegian? It's a Finnish-Norwegian co-production. So 2010, it's a horror movie. And it's set in these mountains, and it's all about these kids that kind of live near this mining town, or they live in this mining town. And on this mountain, this company has uncovered the real Santa Claus. And the Norwegian myth of Santa Claus is the really dark one. It is where Santa Claus is sort of an evil spirit, an evil demon that comes, and if you've been good, he leaves you a present. If you've been bad, he like beats the shit out of you. So it's a real dark version of Santa Claus. And so they dig up this Santa Claus, and he's like this 35 foot tall like demon, and he also has these minions, these Santa Claus minions, who look like the more traditional Santa Claus. They're just like bearded dudes. And it's all about how this town, these kids, it's kind of like Stranger Things, but with like demon Santa Claus. So it's all about these Norwegian kids who have to like convince everyone that this is like a bad idea and that we need to stop these Santa Clauses. And it's dark and it's super weird. And it's a totally different take, obviously, on Santa Claus, but it's based in these real sort of myths about Santa Claus from Norway. And it's great. Some people would just call it a horror movie. I call it a horror comedy because there's a lot of like really dark humor in it. And yeah, it's subtitled, so beware. But yeah, Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale. It's R-rated horror movie take on Santa Claus.
Wow.
And,
sounds amazing.
And you guys know that I'm not a huge horror movie person.
Yeah.
I don't like to be scared. This movie isn't so scary as much as it is just sort of clever. And there's some great creature effects. And there's like a couple really awesome action sequences where like they're being chased by these like little demon Santa minions. Yeah, it's pretty great.
Amazing. You are having amazing picks. That
Thank
sounded
you.
Like it was translated from the original Norwegian. You are having amazing picks. These are great picks.
I watch a lot of really weird Christmas movies.
It's awesome.
Yeah. What? If anybody out there who is listening can think of whatever movie I was confusing it with, I thought there was a Yeti in it. Anyway, so
are you talking about one of the stop animation ones?
I'm talking about when I saw Rare Export, my mind went to a movie I saw when I was a teenager about a small town being menaced by a Yeti. I don't know. Hopefully the brain of the internet will kick something back.
Yeah,
that has either Rare Exports in the title.
Otherwise, it
sounds like a franchise thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're accusing me of thinking of The Mummy 3 Dragon Emperor, which has Yetis playing football. I know that's a distinct Yeti movie in my mind.
No. I just mean like the semicolon Rare Exports or whatever sounds like something you tag at the end of a lot of interesting things, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be like a Dick Tracy sequel that we should really get. Joanna, tell us about Meet Me in St. Louis to bring us into our final third.
This is like my least cool pick. Not that my other picks were that cool. But Christmas is time for a tradition, right? And so growing up, my sister and I watched Meet Me in St. Louis and also The Shop Around the Corner, In the Good Old Summertime, both of which are classic Judy Garland musicals. And Meet Me in St. Louis is like, even people who don't like musicals but are film nerds, like, tend to love Meet Me in St. Louis. It's this Vincent Minnelli film, glorious MGM musical, like beautiful, lush cinematography. And it's about this family in the turn of the century in St. Louis, who the state fair is coming to St. Louis, and they are both excited about the state fair coming. And the paterfamilias, the father of the family, is going to have to take a job in New York, and they're all going to have to leave St. Louis to move to New York. So it's a really simple premise. It's just about this family and their little like dramas. But, you know, some very famous songs came out of it. The Trolley Song is a very famous song if you follow Judy Garland things. But, you know, even if you don't, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is from Meet Me in St. Louis. So there's a scene where Judy Garland and her younger sister are sort of dealing with the fact that the family's going to have to move the next day. So, you know, a lot of the lyrics of that song are very bittersweet because it's actually kind of very sad and poignant moment in the movie. And it's beautifully shot. It's just like through the window, Judy Garland looking her most beautiful in like a red velvet gown, singing this classic Christmas song. And it means Christmas to me. So that's Meet Me in St. Louis.
I thought I could hear you audibly blush when you were talking. You almost went on a Judy Garland tangent. You had to roll yourself back.
I could do a whole Judy Garland episode of Storm of Spoilers, but I will not subject you to that. We'll do dragons instead, guys. It's fine.
I think there's what Judy Garland did I digest this year? All the You Must Remember This chunk that they did on her was great.
Yeah.
Podcasts make podcasts. Anyway, for my pick, I'm going to pick a Rankin and Bass stop-motion classic, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, mostly because it is really weird, which I don't know if you guys have seen it or seen it recently, or maybe we all just saw it broadcast on television as children and it didn't occur to you that it was weird. But you take the song, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and you come up with a story that, yes, tells the story about Rudolph, who tries to run away because all the other reindeer won't let him play the reindeer games, which is cool. That's in the song. But there's also a blonde elf who would rather be a dentist, and Yukon Cornelius, a like mountaineer of the Ice Mountains, who all team up together on Rudolph's little journey to the island of misfit toys, where another king lion rules over all the unwanted toys at Christmas, like a pink polka-dotted elephant and not jack-in-the-box and things with square wheels. It's all very odd. And they are menaced by an abominable snowman that ends up, I guess, having a toothache by the ending of it is how they end up being friends. But there's a whole bunch of drama in between the song story of then one foggy Christmas Eve, they needed Rudolph's light and his like craziness. And like what's left is like this dentist storyline that's about being gay and the weird mountain man for, I guess, comic relief purposes. Or so like he does so much more flailing than the other models. I have to imagine that's like his primary purpose of being designed the way he is with this like crazy mustache. It's just so weird that it's become, I guess, a nostalgic pleasure for me, yes, but also much like Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas was probably more shocking the more you realize it's subtext, the more you realize that Rankin and Bass are just making stuff up to pad out Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which is stop motion to begin with in like the days where that didn't, like, that was not a small feat. So why they felt like they needed to pad out with this much, it's just, it's one of those things that exists and it's audacious in its method and storytelling, and there's no way that anybody would do it this way today in their good mind. But somehow it's classic. maybe because it's good, or maybe just because it gets everybody early enough that they can't tell the difference between good or bad. Who knows? But be a dentist if you want to be a dentist, kids. It gets better.
Can I admit something to you right now?
Yeah.
And you won't get mad?
Sure.
I've never seen a single Rankin and Bass.
What? Dave might not get mad, but I'm shocked.
Mad would be an overreaction, but that's a whole...
That's another thing that just sort of passed us, like, passed over the Robinson house. Never
that's
made
interesting.
Impact. Like, we
I
watched,
feel like it's,
you know,
it would be hard to miss those. Like, they were just on all the time.
I know. We watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and we watched, like, It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life. Before NBC bought it, It's a Wonderful Life used to be on, like, every single channel. Colorized and not colorized, and I used to watch that like 6 times a year, but I never watched Rankin and Bass. So
what about A Christmas Story?
Oh, I hated that movie. My sister would make me watch it every year. My sister loved it, and I think it was just because she like forced it on me that I hated it. So
That was filmed not far from where I grew up in Cleveland. Yeah, we used to go to I've been to the house. From The Christmas Story.
I also think I haven't seen, I've never seen Neil's final entry.
Wait, what?
Oh, you haven't, this is also something that my family used to watch all the time. So Neil, take it away and tell Joanna how it's weird that she's a Bill Murray fan and not a Chevy Chase fan.
Yeah, well, God, there's so much to unpack here with Joanna.
What were they watching? just Lord of the Rings on a loop and colorized like versions
movies.
Of black and
we
white
watched,
movies.
We watched a lot of old movies. Yeah.
Okay. So add this to your list, I guess, for this year. But National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which if you've seen, have you seen any of the National Lampoon's movies, like Vegas Vacation or Vacation or European Vacation?
I think I tried to watch Vacation recently because I realized that the Vacation movies were a big hole in my pop culture knowledge, and I like couldn't do it. So
here's the thing.
I think compared, it might be too late for me.
No. Here's the thing. Compared to Christmas Vacation, all those other movies are shit. Like,
okay.
Like amoebas on flies on shit. Like Christmas Vacation is the greatest Christmas movie of all time, and I'll tell you why.
I'm ready.
First of all, Chevy Chase, it's easily Chevy Chase's best, most heartening performance. Like, it makes you believe that he was like a good dude, even though there's many years that say he was not. It has young Juliette Lewis, which is great. Little Johnny Galecki, which is back when he made good career choices and didn't star in the worst show in the history of nerddom. Beverly D'Angelo as the mother will always and forever get me to watch any of the Vacation movies, especially this one, second only to Vegas Vacation, where she sings with Wayne Newton. But so it's all about them hosting Christmas and Clark Griswold, played by Chevy Chase, wanting to give his family the ultimate sort of just family, homey, 80s America Christmas, and it all going terribly wrong. And what brings this movie to life, really, is all the side characters. Like, there's neighbors, this young yuppie couple, the wife is played by, what's her name? Dave? From Seinfeld?
Elaine?
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Sorry. Sorry, JLD. So she plays like this part of this yuppie couple that lives next door, and they hate Clark because he's such a like square home guy. Randy Quaid shows up as Cousin Eddie in his Winnebago to crash the holidays. There's a bunch of just fantastic older actors. Isn't Burgess Meredith in this movie? No. Who's the guy who plays Uncle, what's his name?
Oh, Uncle Leo. Who plays Uncle Leo?
God, I'm looking at IMDb right now. I'm trying to help you guys out.
Lewis. William Hickey plays Lewis.
Okay.
The whole premise of this movie is so simple, but everything in this movie is funny. It is one of the just straight up end-to-end funniest movies that's ever been made. Written by John Hughes. Okay? Written by John Hughes. So it really is, I think, not just the height of like the vacation movies and the National Lampoon movies. It also sort of bucks a lot of the trends of those vacation movies, which is, you know, they got into that National Lampoon sort of vulgarity thing. This is a really sweet movie about everybody's dad who's just trying to make a good Christmas, and it just goes so terribly wrong for him. It's all-time Chevy Chase performance. And it's tangential to your Bill Murray love, because Brian Doyle Murray is in it. So if that's not good enough, I don't know what to say.
I should probably watch Christmas Vacation. I'll watch it. I'll watch it for Christmas.
It's so great.
You only watch one vacation movie all the way through, definitely make it Christmas Vacation.
I'm trying to figure out like what... Sorry. Okay. I'm trying to figure out what Chevy Chase stuff I did watch, like, as a kid. We watched the Fletch movies, and then, of course, I watched Three Amigos on, like, an insane mm-hmm. loop. But I didn't watch Caddyshack. I didn't watch Caddyshack until I was, like, 20-something, and I didn't watch any of the vacation movies. So, yeah.
So your 20-something viewings we've got are Muppet Christmas Carol and Caddyshack.
I mean, and actually, I can source those to the same friend. There's a friend of mine who's, like, worked pretty hard to fill in some of my cultural holes.
Mm-hmm. I would...
Pull out of Jesus.
I would say that there's... That really, the number one reason to watch Christmas Vacation at this point is the sass levels that go on in the scenes between Beverly D'Angelo as the mother and Juliette Lewis as the teenage daughter. Might be some of the height of like family dysfunction.
Is it not so that I can understand those Old Navy commercials?
I mean, maybe.
You will understand the Old Navy commercials.
You'll understand them so much greater, but really it's the you know, Chevy Chase gets a lot of the credit for this movie, but Beverly D'Angelo really kills it in so many ways.
She's a pistol.
She really is.
Do we want to run really quickly through any kind of honorable mentions? Things that didn't make the list?
It sounds like you might have things that didn't make the list, Joanna Robinson.
Well, I just regret not like officially doing an entry for It's a Wonderful Life and Sound of Music. And even though that's just, yeah. And then one more I had, which was Die Hard, which is the stupid thing that people like. It's become stupid to debate it, but it's A, it is a Christmas movie, and B, even if it's not, it's a great movie to watch at Christmas. So, the end.
Yeah, I'm for all those things. Also, I'm interested in what people read and or listen to during the holidays. I definitely am kicking up a lot of, like, Nutcracker and realizing that a lot of that is in Home Alone and then chaining into Home Alone and having all sorts of crazy movie soundtrack slash old composer holiday fun. So if you want to tweet at Storm of Spoilers or me, definitely do that because I want to hear that shit.
Go ahead.
Okay. What? I was gonna say, I have a couple honorable mentions.
Go for it.
A couple just interesting weird ones that usually end up on my playlist. Batman Returns.
Interesting, ooh. Yeah.
Which is definitely a Christmas movie. Ernest Saves Christmas, which I am not ashamed of at all. Gremlins, if you're into some weird stuff. And I feel like there are two other Christmas comedies that one probably gets a little too much love, which is Elf, but it's still it's so good.
I can't. Elf, no.
And Jingle All the Way. Which, I mean, who doesn't love Jingle All the Way?
Also, the films of Shane Black, we should mention, probably.
Ah, yes. Pretty much everything Shane Black's ever done.
Dave, do you have any honorable mentions other than what you said?
I stick with my soundtrack ones.
Okay.
It has a lot of good movies for people, and they only have so many weeks to hit that core, you know, squishy feeling inside, getting people together.
Awesome.
So until next week, when we will be bringing you more end of the year content with our favorite television of 2016, where can people find more of us on the internet? Let's start with Neil Miller this week.
You can find me on Twitter at Rejects. You can also find me at filmschoolrejects.com, where we are doing this week our hashtag 2016 rewind. So all kinds of great looking back at 2016 and being glad it's over, I guess.
Oh, God.
And Joanna?
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can listen to me talk about a number of pop culture things on my new podcast, Gen Pop, with Dave Chen. And then hear me talk about Oscar stuff over on Little Gold Men.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find this podcast and Fighting in the War Room, my other podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com. You can find my writing this week on thrillistandgeek.com. And you can find all of us on Twitter at Storm of Spoilers, where you can tweet us your holiday things that are keeping you sane this week as we dive into the very dredges of 2016 next week. We'll talk to you later, guys. Melikalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you. Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you.